This is the Ward Zero podcast. We're informing you on Calgary's upcoming municipal election.
You are now entering Ward Zero.
Welcome back to Ward Zero for episode two. I'm Darren Krause, editor at LiveWireCalgary.com, and with me are Esmahan Razavi and Jeremy Zhao. We survived episode one unscathed, guys. What kind of feedback did you get out there?
Well, I think people are really excited to hear, you know, civic issues be delved into in a more, in a deeper way. I did see that someone asked us to delve into school board stuff. So that was interesting to me.
What about you, Jeremy? What kind of things did you hear?
I got my friends to listen to the first episode. And one of the things that they had commented on was we wanted to hear a topic or a discussion around the theme of trust beyond just the politics that we talk about, just how maybe even human beings or individuals kind of interact with each other and what their comfort levels are when it comes to these difficult topics that we're going to talk about.
Give me an example. Are we talking about, you know, having an opinion on, let's say, the arena, which I added in as a topic this week because I'm sure it will be an interesting one. But having an opinion on the arena, whether you are for or against, and being able to have a good discourse about that, is that the kind of trust you think they're talking about?
Yeah, that could be one example. I think we've made every issue now, it's either you're with us or against us, and that's not how life works. So, you know, it's just one example that you've pulled up that it's a bigger thing, a much bigger thing than, you know, just municipal politics in general, really.
I think trust is probably at an all-time low, particularly with political figures. So I think it's hugely important. And even in the last election, it's something that kind of came up. And I think it's a problem that's only getting worse. So having candidates who can communicate about that and having us talk about that as well, I think is really important.
So what we're saying is it's okay to have differing opinions, which I'm sure a lot, like we're not always going to see eye to eye on this podcast either. So maybe we can kind of model that type of behavior for people in how we can have that civil conversation. One such example, because I know that this is a touchy issue for a lot of people, and I did say it a little bit tongue in cheek, but Greg Miller reached out to me and I kind of took some heat from him for referring to taxes as a donation to the city. Yes, in retrospect, I understand where Greg is coming from. It is the price we pay for services, but there are varying opinions on how people feel about the way taxes are used in the city. And I think that's a conversation that we should be able to have as we go through the election. Don't be afraid to ping us on Twitter with your thoughts on each show. Give us some feedback. Give us, you know, some discussion points and some suggestions for what you would like to hear on the Ward Zero podcast. There was a lot that happened this week. We, of course, cannot go on. I had an editor's note in our episode one about the big news in between the last two episodes, and that is Mayor Nenshi will not be a candidate for mayor in the upcoming election. Any initial thoughts, guys, before we get into the really deep discussion about Mayor Nenshi and what he has delivered to the city of Calgary over the past year? Were you surprised?
I wasn't surprised. I mean, typically it's a 3 or 4 term position, you know, historically there's just so much building up. And it wasn't just COVID, right? The mayor's handled so many once in a 100-year emergencies, and it takes a toll on an individual. You know, you could come in with such high spirits and such optimism, and in the end, you just get a little bit tired, and that's okay, right? We're human beings, and you know kind of when your time is done and what you've accomplished so far. And I think he's done great things. He started a lot of conversation around things that we haven't talked about before in the municipal political arena, I'll call it. Even in the Bronco era, municipal politics was pretty, you know, boring and dry for the most part. There's not a lot of action going on, you know, the 90s for sure under Outdoor. It was pretty much flat the entire time. And with the election of Nenshi, things changed, conversations happened. I think that's a good thing, although there are some consequences to that, but it's made municipal politics that much more exciting.
Yeah, I think like Jeremy, I wasn't surprised either. I think he's probably had the most eventful terms in office that you could have as a mayor. I think it'll be, you know, interesting to see how this kind of shifts the conversation around what the mayoral election is going to look like. But I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more. Like, I moved to Calgary just a few months after the mayor, Mayor Nenshi, was elected. And at the time, Rob Ford was just elected in Toronto, which is where I lived. And it was a real contrast for me to see him as this kind of worldly, compassionate trailblazer in municipal politics. And I know a lot of my friends in Toronto at the time when I was moving were jealous that I got to have him as mayor. So he really brought some of that like kind of celebrity status, I would say, to the role. And I'm curious to see if that's going to be filled or how that's going to affect the way we look at municipal politics going forward.
How would you rate the mayor's tenure? Like, if you were to grade it, I know that it's difficult because they go through highs and lows, but if you were to give a grade on the entire body of work over the past decade, what would you give him?
I hate grades. I think I would grade him pretty highly. I mean, again, like, he's the only mayor I've known since moving to Calgary. And I really think he tried to push us to think of ourselves as a global city, as a leader in the country, as a city where, you know, people would want to move to, a city where people would want to stay, a city that's ready for big ideas and for conversations that are exciting and that, you know, that are inclusive and that we can all be a part of. So I think I would grade him pretty well.
I'm going to separate it into like different categories. I think he was a rock star when it came to the different emergencies that Calgary experienced under his tenure. I thought he did a fantastic job just stepping up to the plate when you needed to, right? Being the leader that we needed as a city when things were down. But in terms of, we'll call it more long-term, you know, sustainable plans for city building, trying to get a collegial council to work together moving forward, you know, there were some stumbling blocks. I don't particularly blame him for some of the things that he had to do to, you know, get his point across, but sometimes that it doesn't work on a council where it's 15 independent, no party affiliation individuals trying to work together. It doesn't always work the way you want it to. So on that category, it'd be a little bit lower. I think overall, it's given Calgary perhaps a heightened platform in terms of where we are in the world. I really hope whoever's next also kind of continues that legacy.
The other thing I kind of want to touch on is, I mean, I think, you know, he is one of the most high profile racialized figures in politics in our country. And I remember, you know, in the last election, he was kind of talking about that a little bit. And I don't remember who said it, but someone accused him of playing the race card. To me, I mean, I think like that's something that I was a candidate at the time, and that really stuck with me because it made me feel like, oh my gosh, like if this high profile figure who, you know, we all know can't even talk about race and politics without being accused of pulling the race card, what can like a candidate like me say about that? So I also think like he was a leader in that space and really took a lot of hits there too. But I do think he really led the conversation around diversity in our city too.
It's interesting that you bring that up, Asmahan, because in my conversation with Mayor Nenshi, I did ask him about that. Like he wore that right from the very beginning. North America's first Muslim mayor, he said what was interesting and what was frustrating to him is nobody even wanted to talk about his color. It wasn't about that for a lot of people. And interestingly, he said he didn't feel that that was an issue in Calgary. Neither was his religion, but it was something that he wore in international media. He was the first Muslim mayor in North America of a major city. He said he had to get used to that aspect in terms of how he was going to, I guess, project himself and whether he wanted to reject it or accept it. And ultimately, he said, I realized I had to accept it because there was so much more that we needed to talk about. And I think that it really did start to give us the permission to have those conversations about race and about where the city was headed as a, you know, we often get the whole redneck sort of meme going on with Calgary and Alberta in particular. But I think for a lot of people and in a lot of ways, it maybe broke down that vision of Calgary around the world.
I'm totally going to play the race card right now, if you can call it the race card. The mayor had an interview with CBC. I think I heard the clip of it where he talked about the need for more diversity representation on council or any elected office, and he said he would be there to protect those individuals who decide to make that move and run for a political office. So if he's listening right now, you know, you're the individual that I am looking up to, and I'm saying this individual, person of color, made it. He became the mayor of a major city in North America. And I have somebody now to look up to and say, like, if that individual can do it, maybe I could do it. I'm not declaring that I'm running or anything. I'm just saying there's a role model now that I can look up to and say anything is possible. And we are being able to, we're given that opportunity now because there's a trailblazer in front of us and we can follow that lead.
Well, we did talk about the issue of role modeling as well. And I, in my narrow, ignorant sort of vision, you know, just stuck with it to race. But Mayor Nenshi said, and he goes, I want to challenge you. If I was a role model, I was a role model for more than just Calgary's ethnic communities. Anybody can do it. He had a poor upbringing. His family were immigrants coming in from Tanzania. This has a lot of different threads to it. So it's not just an ethnic thing for him. It's an anybody thing. And I thought that was particularly poignant during our conversation. Now, what about his legacy? I do have an audio clip here where the mayor talks about legacy. He doesn't pinpoint it to one particular thing, a Green Line thing or a downtown thing. But let's have a quick listen, and then I'll get you guys to talk about what you think the mayor's legacy is.
I think the biggest thing is if you think back 11 years ago, politics in Calgary and in Alberta were pretty rigid. You know, people didn't take as much of an active role in shaping their own future because the future was something that would happen to us and the politicians managed that. And so what I'm really excited about probably the most is the incredible increase in civic engagement. Even when it's nasty, even when it's mean, it is people really feeling like they've got a stake in the future of their city. And for me, if that can continue, then that's probably the biggest legacy.
Esmahan, what do you think Mayor Nenshi's legacy will be as we look back on his tenure in Calgary?
I think he'll be seen as a mayor who made Calgarians think about municipal politics in a different way, who made municipal politics relevant, not just to politicos like us, but to everyday people, to people who are in every quadrant of the city. I think, you know, Jeremy touched on this earlier, that he'll be seen as someone who stepped up when we were facing disasters, whether it was our flood or, you know, this COVID pandemic. He's really shined in those moments. And again, I think I said too, I think he'll be seen as, you know, the mayor who put Calgary on the map, not just in Canada, but on an international stage. So I think those three things are really, really part of like his tenure in office.
For me, his tenure is all about that conversation, right? I don't think as a city prior to his election, I mean, there was a bit of it at the end with Bron Kanye, but he really drove that conversation about we don't have to plan the city the way we've done it for the past 5 decades. We can do a little bit better in terms of how we manage sprawl, how we manage a sustainable, climate-friendly city that future generations can enjoy. You know, to me, and I can only speak for myself, those are kind of his roots, is the sustainability part of developing a city that's prosperous, that has lots of jobs, but at the same time understands the consequences if we don't deal with the environment, if we don't deal with the sustainability issue. These are real issues, whether we want to talk about them or not. And I think he really drove that conversation forward.
Esmahan, you touched on it as we started this segment on Mayor Nenshi, that it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out in terms of the mayoral race. I have heard that it has already started to make one potential candidate think about where they sit in the mayoral race. What do you think this does now that Mayor Nenshi is not a part of the upcoming campaign?
I think it completely shifts the dynamic of the race. I mean, Mayor Nenshi is this giant figure in municipal politics, and now he's not going to be a name on the ballots. So there's a real vacuum there, I think. And I'm sure that candidates who are already out there or who are like thinking about throwing their hat in the ring are going to think about how to fill that vacuum. Because again, like we've all touched on, he drove the conversation in a different way. And I think, you know, people who were inclined to support him are going to be looking for that type of conversation. Obviously people want freshness and stuff too, but I think there is just going to be such a vacuum, and I'm interested to see how people position themselves on that.
Is there any polling done yet about the election, or at least a mayoral race? I've seen some, I'll call them push polls maybe, but we really have, if I were to be like blunt, there's only really two front runners right now in the race. You're going to get like 20, 30 other candidates. And unless they pull a Nenshi, right, which is kind of how he became the front runner at the end, I don't see any other kind of outstanding candidates right now for the mayor's seat.
What if Jeff Davison enters the race now that Mayor Nenshi is out? It may have provided an opportunity now for Jeff Davison to jump in. Does that change things substantially in your mind?
Maybe. It's hard to say, right? Every time I predict a mayoral race, I end up not doing such a good job of it, right? I think things can change. And Nenshi really showed that during the course of his first run at the mayor's seat. You know, he went basically from third to first. The dynamics changed so quickly. We saw that before with past provincial elections, where the dynamics just changed so fast over a course of a few weeks during the high intensity campaigning period. Anything can go. So I think it's way too early to talk about whether or not things will change or not, because things can happen in September. We know from COVID just how fast developments happen, and sometimes we vote based on that gut emotion at the very end when we're trying to tick off who we want to vote for. So I think it's too early, but there are certain candidates that stand out, whether they have had experience as counselors or some prominent position within the city beforehand, that make them stand out. And then there are the unfortunately others, and I can say that because I was one of the others at one point in my life.
I'm going to put you both on the spot here with one final question before we go on to the next segment. Who does Mayor Nenshi's removal from the campaign help more, Jeremy Farkas or Jyoti Gondek?
That's a tough one. The challenge is that a lot of people vote municipally based on name recognition. And when you have like the most recognizable name now no longer on the ballot, then who else is recognizable? I mean, both Jyoti Gondek and Jeremy Farkas have been visible counselors, but Jeremy has done a good job over the last 3 years of, you know, being in the media. And, you know, I know I've had conversations with people who are like, yeah, I think, you know, Jeremy's different. And I'm like, okay, but like, what does different mean? Like different how, you know, what are you looking for in different? So I think in some sense, it helped, he benefits from now holding quite a bit of name recognition. On the other hand, I think that in some ways, Gondek might paint herself as a successor to Nenshi, like a fresher sort of counselor or sort of mayoral figure who cares about similar things and wants to sort of continue some of the work that's already been done. I don't see anyone as a real successor to him right now.
It is a tough question. And I think the advantage that Jeremy has is that he is now challenging the status quo, and that status quo is Nenshi, whereas before Nenshi was challenging the status quo. So we're kind of on that rabbit hole, I guess. So at this point in the election race, I do think it helps Farkas a little bit more. There needs to be really good messaging, really a solid platform from Jyoti Gondek in order to say, hey, I'm more of that nuanced challenger in this race that can continue some of those conversations that we haven't had before or haven't had before relative to the decades of just plain nothingness. So I don't know if that's a good response, but I do think at this point it does help Farkas a bit more.
I do think, and this comforts me a little bit because I'm not the biggest Farkas fan by any measure of the imagination, that the other thing that is going to like affect this municipal election is the other orders of government and the sentiment that people have. You know, right now we're in a really, really polarized environment in this province, and the pandemic has been weighing really heavily on people. People are not super pleased with the job that the provincial government's been doing. And I think in some ways, you know, Jeremy has tied himself to that government. We'll see if that sort of helps or hinders him.
So you brought up the idea of the pandemic, Esmahan. That's a great segue into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, because it's popped up and it dovetails two different things. We've obviously got the situation where COVID cases are well over 1,000 per day, but we've also got an increasing number of candidates going out and campaigning, doing their thing. But it's this issue of door knocking. I can recall whether it's a provincial election, whether it's a municipal election, you know, quite often there's a little bit of a stir about who shows up at forums and who doesn't. And quite often the excuse is door knocking. And I've even talked with several political campaign strategists who do confirm that door knocking is one of the most effective ways to build a relationship with voters and therefore maybe have them end up marking your name on the ballot. But it was, the issue was raised this time around that maybe I don't want people knocking at my door with the prevalence of COVID-19 and the variants. And to the point where I saw at least one person mention that they would not cast a vote for someone who did door knock given the pandemic situation. How do you think COVID will impact the campaign this time around?
I mean, the question of door knocking is pretty interesting. And I'm a big fan of door knocking. I love door knocking myself. But I know that I personally would not vote for someone who door knocked on my door right now, because we're in the middle of like a third wave with highly contagious variants. And that stresses me out. And I think that there are people who are sort of in that camp. But I also see photos of candidates who are out there door knocking as we speak. So I think there's a little bit of a split. I think that there are candidates who, you know, have decided to be outside and door knocking. And I think that there are candidates who are cognizant of what's going on in the pandemic and don't want to make people feel unsafe or uncomfortable right now. So I think, I mean, door knocking, the truth is, like, when you do go door knocking, it's not like everybody, you know, answers their door and you have a conversation. Campaigns always have to have other methods of outreach, whether that's, you know, phones, texting, virtual, digital ads, or anything like that. So I think we'll see those types of those types of techniques or tactics rise. And I think, you know, candidates are going to have to be creative about how they look like they're working hard to earn people's vote and how they get their name out there, because that's like one of the most important things. It's building that name recognition around yourself. I think it is a little bit harder. And I think they're all going to have to navigate this space of, it, you know, if I'm not door knocking right now, then when can I door knock? Is the summer a better time? Is it when everybody's vaccinated? Like, what does that look like? That's not an easy question to answer.
Door knocking is like one of these things where it can almost make or break a campaign. We saw that very, very well and played out in 2013 when Chris Harper and Ward Sutherland were going at it, right? Chris Harper lost by 86 votes and he door knocked continuously, and he couldn't even overcome that inertia because Ward Sutherland was basically the, we'll call it quote unquote, designated successor to Dale Hodges there. So that example, that election cycle highlights the importance of door knocking. So now that the game's changed in 2021, like Esmahan said, there's going to be these creative, interesting, weird strategies in order to get as many people as possible to listen to you. I mean, you could probably pull a Rick Bell. I know he ran a long time ago. He drove in this vehicle, I guess, that he had, I don't know, was it customized, or he did something, and and I could see something like that, like a socially distanced car parade or something down random city blocks just to promote yourself in order to get the messaging out. When I ran in 2007, I didn't really do any door knocking. It was just more like I was an anomaly, and I kind of used that to my advantage to try and talk about myself as a candidate. So there are so many creative and interesting things that I can think of and that have been done in the past just to get yourself and your name recognition out there.
I'm going to play a little bit of a devil's advocate, maybe not as much a devil's advocate, because I do sit in the camp of, you know what, my thoughts on the COVID pandemic are actually quite benign. I'm just like, I'm going to follow the public health restrictions, and eventually we're going to come to the end of it. Am I crazy about everything? No, I just kind of am like a lamb. You know, I just go forward with what the public health regulations are here. But we do have the ability to get together with people in the outdoors. if I walk up and I knock on a door and I back up, I mean, maybe more than 3 meters, is that not okay? Can we not have a conversation out on a doorstep like you would have with a neighbor, like you'd have if you were going to visit your mom or your dad, you know, that sort of thing? Can we not have that? Can we not find a middle ground here on door knocking? Or, excuse me, going back to that whole trust issue, does it have to be, oh, my public health freedoms or my rights and freedoms are being infringed, to the absolute paranoia? Like, do we have to operate in this polar opposite sort of spectrum when it comes to something as simple as door knocking?
I mean, I think part of it is dependent on where we are in the pandemic. Like, are we in a place where cases are lower and people feel more comfortable about interacting with newer people? Or are we in a situation like we are now where, you know, cases are rising, hospitals are seeing more and more cases as well. And, you know, we're dealing with some highly contagious variants. So I think it's really contextual, or it really depends on the context. I will say that, like, it's interesting. I'm, you know, a huge, like, US politics nerd as well. There were, you know, the Democratic Party decided not to door knock by and large, but there were candidates who went out there and did what you said, Darren, wore a mask, you know, kind of stayed a bit away from the door. But they felt that, you know, face-to-face interaction was really important. So, I mean, I think it's just going to depend.
Yeah, tough to say. This virus kind of changes constantly, right? And it really plays on the fatigue right now that Canadians are going through in general. It's really hard to say. I don't think I have really anything to add to that, to be honest.
I just want to touch on one quick thing with regards to the virtual campaign. I think it's no secret to anybody that when you put out a Facebook post or when you put out a tweet or something like that, it gets seen by a fraction of people who are out there. So, I mean, I think we all agree that door knocking is a tried and true way of doing it. But is a virtual campaign a reasonable substitute? Or are you only, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, preaching to the converted?
I mean, I think there are different ways of engaging with voters digitally. You're right. Like, you know, if somebody is out there on Twitter, are they necessarily reaching the constituents in their ward? I would say probably not. But if someone is buying Facebook ads and Instagram ads and is blanketing their ward, then they probably are kind of engaging with people who would otherwise not know them. So I think, like, there's tons of different tactics that people can use. And again, like, people have to be creative. And, it, you know, we're talking about how people can engage with voters. But the other thing is, like, candidates have to build teams and have volunteers and stuff, which I do think is harder virtually as well. So there has to be that kind of thought process around, well, what does my campaign even internally look like? How do I get volunteers together virtually to do things like make calls or do some things on social media or text or whatever? So yeah, the challenges kind of come from a number of places.
I might be wrong, but I don't see, like, community halls and libraries opening up to 100% capacity by the election. So you're forced to do virtual things. There's going to be a lot of groups out there in Calgary hosting virtual forums, whether we like it or not. I know that excludes a significant portion of the population from being involved in municipal politics, but it's not our choice right now, given the restrictions. So whether we like it or not, you're going to have to log on to your computer or laptop or phone in order to be involved in a forum, ask some questions, have a virtual coffee with your candidates. It's just the circumstances have put us there now. I don't, so too bad, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I just want to switch gears now into a couple of other topics. One thing came up. I know that a lot of people see this as a two-person race, but Brad Field has been pushing out a couple of ideas this week. One of the ideas that he put out there was the idea of two terms for councillors, for mayors. Now, it's an interesting idea. What makes it even more interesting, though, is part of the conversation I had with Mayor Nenshi that I just want to cue up here, because he talked about career politicians.
I'm not one of those people who says, oh, we shouldn't have career politicians, because I would ask you, should we not have career electricians? You know, I actually want someone who knows what they're doing. Right. And I don't want to denigrate. People who want to go into public service. It's a job like other jobs, but it's a very special job. And you want to have people who know what they're doing.
The mayor makes a good point. We are okay with career lawyers. We're okay with career engineers. We're okay with career electricians. Why shouldn't we be okay with a career politician? How do you guys feel about this term limit idea that came forward from Brad Field this week?
We've seen previous candidates declare that, and current sitting councillors declare that they will not run for more than X amount of terms, yet they are running for their X plus Y number of terms already. So nobody can force them to hold to what they've said, right? It would be a provincial regulation that would compel them to follow that directive. So you can say it, but historically what we've seen in the past has not been the case.
So is this just an attempt at a headline grab, Jeremy?
Maybe. I can't say that for sure. I think it stirs up good conversation potentially, but you know, once you get into that role, I'm sure you will find that maybe even 8 years is not enough to see the change that you want to see in a municipality in Alberta. It's change is slow. Progress is very, very slow. You're going to have to wait decades, and you're going to have to put a lot of effort and time to get what you want through. And that doesn't always happen within those 8 years that you want to think about, right? And remember, council used to be elected every 3 years. So was 6 years enough, right? We only extended it by 4 because of quote unquote cost savings to how we run elections. So, you know, if we reduced it, the number of terms, does that change your platform? Does that change the way you think about how long an individual should be in office for?
Yeah, I'm more interested in like how we can make a more even playing field between incumbents and challengers. Because I think that there are structural issues that really give incumbents an advantage during an election. They obviously have a higher name recognition. It's much easier for them to raise money. And that really makes it like a David and Goliath type of situation with any challengers. So, I mean, I'd like to think about that and look at things like, you know, additional campaign finance reform to see how we can change that.
So I want to move on to one other issue. It, in a lot of ways, it was much ado about nothing. I think many of the media were informed to one degree or another about some impending news about the arena. Really difficult to say, really difficult to postulate without potentially being wrong about the information. But is there a chance, given what you have seen about what happened behind closed doors, do you think that there's a chance the arena could become an election issue?
You can't see me, but I'm rolling my eyes right now. Like, that's all I'm going to say. Maybe Esmond has more to add to that.
Well, so here's how it could be political. Let me cue up this audio clip from Councillor Jeremy Farkas. He basically said this was one of the craziest things that he had ever heard of in his tenure as counselor.
Thanks. And without going into the substance, my hands are a bit tied here, but I would say that this is by far the most stunning thing that I've seen in my entire time as a counselor. I will not support this, and I want to be on the record, especially during the pandemic. Once Calgarians find out about this, they will be furious. And I believe very, very strongly that we owe the public transparency and that Calgarians deserve to know clearly what we're voting on. So, Council, I would ask you to please replace these confidential recommendations with what the recommendations actually are. You can debate the merits of this direction, but at least Calgarians deserve to know what is being voted on today.
So I guess hearing that, is this a case of it already being used as political capital?
I'll jump right in, and you can call my non-existent lawyer if I speculate wrong, but I assume it has something to do with potential cost overruns that are just unacceptable to certain counselors or maybe to the entire council. And yeah, it plays on that discussion that's been going on for the past 4 years about how are we spending our money. Our tax base in the downtown area is basically gone now. We're spending even more money. We have ongoing conversations and issues around the Green Line's funding. So now this is going to dig us into a deeper hole. That's what I'm going to be speculating. And sure, we can turn it into a political issue if we really want to, but this is kind of what you got into when you decided to go ahead with an arena to support a for-profit organization. I understand it can be divisive for certain Calgarians because they like seeing the Flames, they like going to see hockey, but this may potentially change that conversation again. Where do our priorities lie when it comes to capital spending? Who are we benefiting in this city? And how much do we trust now? That theme about trust that we talked about at the beginning. How much do we trust our council and the other party that's making this deal about the arena when it comes to finances, when it comes to what has been written down in contracts?
I mean, I think Jeremy is right. Like, the broader conversation around, you know, what are we using public money for? What are our priorities? How is spending in Calgary or by the city of Calgary, how do we think about that? I think those are questions that I think are really going to be a big part of the election.
No thoughts specifically on the arena? Could this be something that people talk about on the campaign trail?
Yeah, if you go, this cost overrun is going to be hundreds of millions of dollars over, for example. I don't know what that amount is, or maybe it has nothing to do with money. But now and this is a point actually I fully agree with Farkas on, is these closed door meeting sessions where we really have no idea what's going on, and they have so many of them. It is very frustrating as an individual, as a citizen who wants to talk about transparency and what the city does and trying to set up good role models. And I understand all that legal stuff that ties their hands, but at the same time, it is so frustrating. You know, even right now when we're talking in this podcast, we don't really know what's going on. And it's us that's at risk of being sued or being charged with something because we don't know anything. And it's frustrating. I can't have a good, solid conversation with you two and not know what's going on in my own city.
And that just like feeds into the trust point you made, you know, at the start of this, Jeremy and Darren, like, we need to be able to have transparent conversations about big issues related to the city and about spending decisions and how our money is being allocated. And if there is this idea that this is happening behind closed doors, I mean, I think all that does is engender more distrust towards our city council. So I don't think that's the right way to go about anything like this.
All right, we are going to talk about the wards, the candidates in the wards, some of the issues in the wards. We're going to begin with wards one and two. But before we get there, I just wanted to really quickly bring up this notion of the ward boundaries. I know that some of the counselors or some of the candidates, rather, who have announced have mentioned that they are in a certain area or that they represent a certain area, and they've had to clarify for people, you know, where they're voting now. Just really quickly, do you think this is going to have any impact on the upcoming election?
Ward boundaries and like electoral boundaries change pretty frequently. So I don't know. I'm a little skeptical that this will have a huge role in impacting the election. But maybe I'm not seeing something.
I think we need more wards, to be honest. All we've done is kept the same 14, but don't go into 15 because that's my territory. But we've kept the same 14, and then we've just readjusted the boundaries sometimes, you know, and it's just like the most silliest thing in the world, right? We're growing the amount, the population per counselor that they have to be responsible for and respond to with local constituency concerns. So we're not actually doing any favors right now for people who are running. Their workload is just going to get more and more.
And I completely agree, Jeremy. And also, like, our city is growing and growing. Our population is growing. And I don't know if people realize this, but the ward boundary is equivalent to like 2.5 provincial ridings. And your ward counselor is the person who is like most responsive to you as a citizen. So I think if we had more wards, people would be better represented, actually.
That's an interesting point. Maybe we will dive further into that in an upcoming show. Let's get to the wards, though. Ward one, I'm not sure if you guys have seen the ward map, but generally speaking, we've got some nice shapes on the ward map, except for ward one. It is by far the most oddly shaped ward. It has to wedge into here. It's got to go into here. It's got a little point and an arm. We have three candidates so far in that ward. We have Jacob McGregor, I hope I have the name right, Gaz Kamar, and of course the incumbent Ward Sutherland. Any thoughts on how this race is shaping up and maybe some of the issues that are going on in Ward 1?
Ooh, I don't know if I can comment on the issues yet, but given the what I've seen so far in Ward 1, Jacob has positioned himself, we'll call it, as right of Ward Sutherland. But I think, you know, unless there's a really major contender, I this will be a pretty quiet race, at least in my opinion.
I think Ward 1 could be a really exciting race. I know in the last election, Coral Bliss, you know, she didn't have a ton of money, didn't have a ton of power behind her or anything like that. But she put up a really, really strong fight against Ward Sutherland. So I think with the right candidate there, it could be a really, really interesting election. But I think right now it's a little sleepy.
Jeremy, interesting that you said that Jacob is positioning himself right of Ward Sutherland. Is that because Jacob is really far right in his ideals, do you think, and what he's put out on social media? Or is it because, and maybe I'm way out to lunch on this, I feel like Ward has actually shifted much further to the center than when he was first elected.
And this dichotomy that we always talk about, right and left, and I'm guilty of it, can be misleading. I do think that Jacob's messaging, we'll say, is more aligned with kind of the messaging that Farkas is putting out right now, right? Really focused on like the taxpayer, that tax savings portion of the dialogue. And, but you know, I'm just a political, I haven't ventured deeply enough into each candidate and each of their profiles, websites, social media, what they have on their platform. So I am talking about generalities here. But the point that you brought up about Ward Sutherland, call it shifting to the center, I see it still as you're a counselor with no political affiliation. You are able to be flexible in how you vote, in how you look at issues, right? You should not be tied down to any single ideology. The city is a complex place, 1.3, 1.4 million people, metropolitan area. These are not issues where you just go, yeah, it's always going to be this viewpoint. There are many viewpoints, and we will continue to see that into the future. So I don't know if it's a shifting. I think it's just like, this is what you're faced with. These are the issues. These are the facts. This is the research that's gone into it. I'm going to make an informed decision based on all of these inputs.
Esmahan, do you think he shifted a little bit to the middle, or do you kind of see it the same way as Jeremy does, where it's just a case of, you know, my opinion is bound to change when presented with information?
Yeah, I mean, I agree to an extent, but I also think that because of, you know, Jeremy Farkas's election to council, the sort of spectrum on council has shifted a little bit. So I don't know that Sutherland has so much shifted as like Jeremy has extended the spectrum. What would maybe have once been seen as like, you know, one of the more right positions on council is by virtue of that shift, not where it was. I do think it's interesting to note again, like what I do agree with Jeremy in the sense that, you know, as a counselor, you shouldn't be, you know, necessarily beholden to like ideology, and you are supposed to like take into account, you know, the views of your constituents and like actually think about what makes sense for the ward and of course like for the city as a whole. So
is there any one issue that sticks out to you in Ward 1? I mean, I know that the race you had mentioned is somewhat sleepy, but there, I mean, what are some of the issues, or are we yet to see what some of the top issues are in Ward 1?
I think we'll probably see issues emerge, but I think Ward 1, like other wards, will have that conversation about Calgary's future, about Calgary, you know, how do we grow? Do we continue to grow out, or do we re-envision ourselves in a different way? So I think those conversations are probably going to drive the election there. In terms of like hyper-local issues, I'm not aware of any yet, but if anybody is, I'd like to hear them.
I'm just looking at a map right now. I know there was earlier, a couple of years ago, there was controversy about the mall development near Olympic Park. So I know it's not exactly in Ward 1 based on what I'm seeing right now, but it's pretty close proximity to that area. So that could be a potential talking point.
Okay. Let's move on to Ward 2. This one clearly has a field of candidates with a mission, and that mission is to unseat incumbent Joe Magliocca. There is an issue for a lot of people up there in terms of accountability, given Magliocca's expense scandal related to the FCM meetings. I haven't seen Magliocca officially make his candidacy public, but we've got Jennifer Wyness, Kim Tyers, Ron Taylor, and Francis Aranya. Anyone stick out there to you guys?
This is Jennifer Wyness's second try at this. She did, again, really well in the last election. Again, my understanding is she didn't have a large budget, didn't have a large team, but worked pretty hard. So I will be interested to see if this time around, with, you know, maybe some heightened name recognition, whether she'll do well. And I do think like Joe Magliocca has made himself a bit of a lightning rod, even on the conservative side, right? Where people are like, okay, you say you're all about fiscal responsibility, and yet your expense reports seem to indicate otherwise. I know Kim Tyers has been pushing him on that as well from a more, I'm sorry, Jeremy, I'm talking in a political spectrum language, but from a more like bright perspective.
You know, what's interesting is Magliocca just kept running right before Gord Lowe decided to retire. So he built that trust within the Ward 2 community long before, you know, he was finally elected. So I wanted to highlight that one point. The second point is, you know, there's the expense scandal and all that, but there's a portion of the population out there that's saying, hey, yeah, this individual may have stumbled in terms of one department, but he has still been standing up to the spending issues at City Hall, and we're going to overlook that personal portion, but for the greater good, if I could call it that, in terms of what he is standing for right now. And I think I want to highlight that. It doesn't necessarily mean I agree with everything that he stands for, but that is his viewpoint. And I still think it's a very valid viewpoint for a lot of the constituents or electors in Ward 2 who elected him to begin with.
Ward 2 is a lot like Ward 1. Is there anything that really stands out as an issue that maybe one of these candidates, over and above the issue of expenses, could exploit with Joe Magliocca?
I'll try to jump in here. I have to look at the map again, but I think his ward is basically that more traditional suburb area. And so when we were talking about 14, 15 new communities for Calgary, his ward is in that area. And so there is interest, there are viewpoints up there where, hey, I need development, or, you know, there's potential to grow the city in that perspective. So I think that's going to drive a lot of the conversation, because it is in the Northwest, and that's where a lot of the new communities could potentially be built out to. So I think we can't overlook that, right? We always tend to focus on the inner city wards and all these inner city problems. Well, Joe's got to represent his constituency as well, right? What are the physical boundaries of that? So I think we need to think about that.
I agree with what Jeremy said. I don't really have much to add on to that. I mean, I think, you know, Joe's made some interesting choices on council, and there's a lot for anybody who's running against him to kind of delve into and take him to task on.
One final question on this before we wrap up this show. Is there a danger that having Jennifer and Kim, who, you know, probably... they're the ones out there. They're the ones that have been extremely public about their run. Jennifer having the experience and coming, you know, reasonably close last time around, but that they split. And if Joe chooses to run again, that he could be the one who comes up the middle.
From my perspective, I think that Jennifer and Kim are really different and have like different stances on issues. I see what you're saying, but I actually think that, you know, Jennifer is, to my understanding, at least, like pretty substantively different from Kim. And so, I guess if you're thinking about it as like a Joe versus everybody else thing, maybe, but if we're thinking about it as like a, what kind of vision is going to take Ward 2, I don't know if, you know, it's kind of accurate to put them together.
I guess if I were to be realistic, Joe's got this secured. I think there's just too many splitting of votes. You know, if your campaign is about, hey, we want to not have Magliocca as the next counselor, then you've kind of lost that narrative, and he's going to win. You heard it here first, I guess.
All right, guys, that's a great place to wrap it up. I know that this week our schedules have some hard stops, so we're going to wrap it up there. Great conversation. I want to thank you both. Again, everyone, please, if you have some comments, questions, feedback, feel free to hit any one of us on Twitter, and we will continue this conversation leading up to the October 18th, 2021 municipal election. Thank you so much for joining us.